Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today I'm joined by the editors of Lucky Peach. I've got Peter Meehan and Chris Ying. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm going to lean in and talk really close to this microphone.
Yeah, can you just talk really quiet? Really quietly, soft talk, really please, all the whole interview. So you guys just came out with issue number two.
Yeah, issue number two, the sweet spot, the most esoteric topic we could come up with.
Yeah, so for listeners out there unacquainted with Lucky Peach, it's David Chang's food magazine, and issue number one was, the theme was ramen. This issue... Yeah, it's definitely an esoteric concept. What's in this issue?
Pictures of dead fish. No, really, there are. I mean, there's pictures of living fish, too, but then we killed them. But we took pictures of all parts of that process.
It's 176 pages of dead fish pornography.
There's also a vibrator. But there's
that's
only
true.
One, there's only one vibrator, and it's shaped like a dolphin.
No, but seriously, folks... it covers all manner of things having to do with the sweet spot, literal sweet things. Christina Tozzi and her amazing crew at Milk Bar gave us a bunch of sweet recipes, and there's, you know, metaphysical sweet spots, sports sweet spots.
See, Chris went to college, so he can use a word like
metaphysical. Sexual sweet spots.
There's not. There's just
there's
a picture.
Literally a sexual sweet spot.
I mean, there is, but that's a completely different... That's not something we cover.
Oh, no.
It's not like...
Because we don't know anything about it.
It's not like Penthouse Forum, which is unfortunate.
That because, is unfortunate.
Because if we did that, then we wouldn't have to write as much. So I think we should probably change the magazine so it's more like Penthouse Forum.
Can we just make a note for the next issue to do a Letters to Penthouse food porn section?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Or food just porn, stick why to food boobs. Why just,
yeah. It's like the pizza delivery man showed up at my door on Saturday night.
Well, so yeah, you've got like a ton of things going on in this issue. There's a lot of themes of sports sweet spots and chefs peaking and all sorts of amazing stuff. I want to know from each of you, what is one of your favorite sweet spot moments in the issue and why?
I think my favorite is Brian McMullen, who's the art director at McSweeney's, curated, put together a page of stickers. So there's 45 like fruit stickers or stickers like you would see on produce at the supermarket, but they say funny or dirty things, and I think, you know, it's just great to have stickers. I don't know. I'm pro sticker.
The thing I like about this issue is that there's this whole range of sweet spots. I think the fact that there's so many different ones is my favorite part. I think that there's a blue dolphin shaped sex toy in the same issue that we interview like neuroscientists about human peaks is a neat thing.
Yeah.
I think that's a cop out answer. I think
you are should, my favorite.
You should thing. Just pick one thing. I mean, she has to,
fine.
She has to pick one.
Fine.
Thing.
My favorite sweet spot moment in Lucky Peach issue 2 is Peter Meehan's article.
Aww.
That's Peter nice. Meehan's my favorite living writer.
That's a really good answer.
I'm crying, but you can't see it on the radio.
Well, yeah. All right. I want to talk about, speaking of your article, Peter Meehan. It's kind of a diary, really.
Yes.
An account of your travels.
Yes.
Can you explain to people where you guys traveled to and some of the things that you got into in those travels?
We went to the first issue of the magazine was about ramen, and I wrote a big, long, rambling account of like 7 or 8 days in Tokyo where Chang and I and a television crew ate a disgusting amount of ramen, and then, you know, that was like kind of the end of the essay, was the morning we were leaving Tokyo, and this issue picks up on the bullet train to Kyoto, where we went to meet, spend a few days with Yoshihiro Murata, who is the chef of the 3-Michelin-star restaurant Kikunoi there in Kyoto. He's kind of like the boss of Japanese cuisine. He's like the Paul Bocuse of Kaiseki, and Kaiseki is the most refined, you know, like aspect or expression of Japanese cuisine. So we went down there and hung out with Murata, and he one of the things we were looking and talking about was ikejime, which is a Japanese style of fish butchering, because what it's you know, in the way we kill fish here is often slitting the gills and letting them bleed out on the boat. And ikejime, you take the fish, you let it relax after it's come out of the water in like a live well, in like, you know, essentially like a fish tank, and then you take it out, you spike it in the brain with a hook, and then you cut it open in the back and you slide a wire down its spine. And it is gruesome, you know, it's graphic, it's killing, but the idea is that it's, instead of asphyxiating over the course of minutes or hours, it dies very quickly. So that's, you know, it's ostensibly more humane because it's in pain for less time, and it organizes rigor mortis. So it changes the way that the fish flesh actually, you know, it goes through that rigor mortis process, and it has a different texture than fish killed in the more common style. So that was like a sweet spot in death, you know. So that was something we wanted to check out. So we went to Kyoto, did that. We went to Louisville, Kentucky, because Julian Van Winkle makes his whiskey there, and his whiskey is the greatest. And we basically wanted an excuse to go and drink with him, but also to find out, you know, everybody, you know, like anybody can make whiskey, but what makes his ability, why is his whiskey better? And it comes down to his perception, his taste, his ability to pick out a barrel of whiskey and say, yeah, this is Van Winkle whiskey, this isn't, because it can be, it's the same essential recipe as like Weller whiskey. I think it's a heavily corn whiskey, but it's something in Julian's ability to hone in on these flavors that, you know, you can't explain it otherwise. You know, we tried to like learn if there was something in like where in the warehouse they aged the barrels or any of that. And it's just about Julian. And so Louisville, Kyoto, and then we went to Copenhagen and hung out with Rene Redzepi, because you can't actually write about food and not write about Rene Redzepi these days. It's not allowed. I don't know. There's like a tax if you don't write about Rene Redzepi, if you don't go foraging with him. So we did that, and it's great. And it was, we tried to not bum rush Rene's show, 'cause he was having his second kid. We tried to come a few weeks after the due date, and he ended up having his kid the night that we got there. So I don't know. It was a good time hanging out with Rene. He's a good dude.
Chris, were you on any of these adventures?
I don't get to go on any adventures.
So you didn't get to slaughter any fish or anything like that?
Not for the magazine. I just slaughter fish every night. It's like a ritualistic thing.
In your spare time. Right. Yeah, that sounds very relaxing.
He's got a koi pond in his backyard, and he just goes.
I just plunge one hand in there and grab one out alive and bite its.
You're kind of like that little monster in that Hobbit movie.
Gollum.
Yeah,
there or Smeagol.
Wow.
That's his Hobbit name.
Oh, my God. You are such a dork.
never said I wasn't.
Something that maybe it's the nerd in me, the dorky marine biologist at heart that I was amazed by, but Renee and Dave have this moment where they're on a houseboat in Copenhagen and they're sort of like improvising these recipes, and Renee pulls out these old, is it mussels?
Mahogany clams.
Mahogany clams, which are like, what, 100 years old or so?
I guess like 180 to 220 years old by the time they get to like kind of, you know, the size of a big little neck clam.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I had no idea that they could live for that long, first of all.
I, you know, the guy's got tricks. He also pulled out a starfish that they spent a while trying to cook, and it just didn't taste good. Go well.
Yeah. No, it was just the thought of eating something that's that old and has filtered all the submarines of World War II is kind of mind-blowing. So
yeah,
you blew my mind. Wow. So, so yeah, like, I guess, you know, there's so many amazing recipes in this issue.
Well, this, you know, the funny thing is that we started doing this magazine and we're like, oh yeah, we're going to do a magazine. This is going to be great. You've worked in publishing, Chris Yang, so I don't know why you didn't warn yourself or me, but we had, you know, the first issue you could work on forever because it's the first one coming out. The second one we had to do in like 4 months, and at no point during the process did we realize that we developed these recipes in the summer and the magazine would be coming out in November. So we have a bunch of strawberry recipes in our magazine and like a summer crab boil. Right. For an issue that's coming out in November.
Yeah, you know, like other magazines, I think if you look at, if you go to the grocery store or your local magazine purveyor, you'll see that the November issue of a food magazine is supposed to have, you know, fall recipes for butternut squash, ravioli, and turkey.
Right, because you can buy those ingredients, but instead...
Right, and our issue is like, grilling and chilling with Peter Meehan.
Terrible.
This November.
It's very smart. It's like the cool kids approach. Like, oh yeah, you can.
No,
have
no.
We're trying to fix it for the future.
Right. But it's the irresponsible kids approach.
I want to back up for a minute. What was it like, you know, starting with issue one versus issue two? Like, how was the process different for you guys?
Well, I think we thought the magazine was going to be about 100 pages, and that's what we were shooting for. And then we ended up with so much more. That we came up with 174 or 176 pages for the first issue. And then for the second issue, we're like, well, we can't make it smaller. So we had less time and perhaps less stuff on hand. And
well, yeah, we made the first issue sort of in a vacuum. And like Peter said, we thought it was like 100 pages tops. Neither one of us had ever, you know, any idea that would be much larger. And we actually, I don't think that we ever stopped and thought like, oh, if this magazine is successful or if people respond well to it, we'll have to do it again. We thought like we'll do one and we'll go live in a cave.
Right.
And then never have to do it again. And then issue two rolled around and that's when it actually first dawned on us that we had to have a process for making this thing. And we didn't have 3 years to do it. We had 3 months. And, you know, when Peter says like we couldn't make it smaller, we literally couldn't because I had already ordered the paper for it to be a large magazine. So, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, it sounds crazy. Like, you guys, have you slept at all since then, or?
I do a lot of sleeping.
Chris is very good at sleeping, but no, the end process. That was another thing. Like, I know people who work in real magazines, and there's always like the close, and it's right before they're about to ship the magazine to the printer, and like they have to stay at work late, and it's like, you know, I don't know, like an 80s movie about a magazine. You know, they're in Times Square, like working on the magazine, and I'm like, well, no way are we gonna like. Get stuck with that. We're going to get it done ahead of time. I don't know why I thought that. I've never done anything ahead of time in my entire life, but this was like a total, total clusterfuck of a close. I mean, it was like 2.5 weeks of just, my essay wasn't written until like that happened both times, didn't it? And yeah. Literally just like 2 days before shipping it to the printer, I like wrote the essay and then Chris had to edit it and turn it into English, and then Walter Greens had to lay it out and design it. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of bananas, but we're trying to get better at that because it would be better for it not to be. It would be better for it to be a different kind of bananas than that kind of bananas.
And then there's the iPad app. So, how does that differ in terms of, I guess, thinking about it in the same process, like the first issue versus the second?
Well, the iPad app, it's still being worked on, but it's kind of a chicken and egg thing. You know, we were going to shoot all this footage to put into an iPad app, and then, you know, kind of Ying and I had worked together on a story for Panorama, which was a newspaper edition of the McSweeney's Quarterly, and wanted to work together again, and came up with the idea, if we're going to do an iPad quarterly, we should do a print quarterly. So we took stuff like from Dave and my trip to Tokyo and used that as the basis for some magazine articles, you know, or leads to go and get like Ivan Orkin, this ramen chef in Tokyo, to do an article for us. So now, I don't know. I mean, they're separate processes. I mean, I think initially I thought we'll just take all this stuff that we're shooting video and use all the leftovers and scrap to, like, you know, make this magazine. And it's just become clear to me that there are certain places of overlap between making television and making a print magazine that work really well together, and you can get some kind of economy out of it. But there's also, in making a print magazine, you know, a lot that doesn't translate back to TV, or that TV can't provide because its demands are different. And you know, the way that you're going to watch video, or what you need to make good video, is different than what you need to make a good written story.
But I think those differences are sort of what makes me really excited about a project like this, where you can have an iPad app or a TV show or what have you, and you have a print magazine. I think that working in publishing, you hear a lot of, you know, downers talking about the death knell of publishing and how print is dying and things like that. And it seems to be sort of this binary thing where, well, if there are iPads in the world, then there's not enough room for books. And if there are iPhones in the world, no one's going to carry around a magazine anymore. But like Peter's saying, there's a lot of things that don't cross over from one to the other. There's a lot of things that work well in a film format, and there's a lot of things that work better in print format. And so something like this makes me excited, that you can cover the same sort of issues, the same sort of themes and topics, and neither thing has to necessarily suffer, except for the editors have to suffer.
Real talk. Speaking of real talk, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we've got more from Peter Meehan and Chris Ying of Lucky Peach. You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Go ahead on, break them off with a little previews of the remix. Now I'm not trying to be rude, but hey pretty girl, I'm feeling you. The way you do the things you do reminds me of my Lexus cool. That's why I'm all up in your grill, trying to get you to a hotel. You must be a football coach, the way you got me playing the field. So baby give me that, and let me give you that. Running her hands through my fro, bouncing on 24s. Why they saying I'm ready? It's the remix to Ignition, hot and fresh out the kitchen. Mama ruling that body, got every man in here wishing. Sipping on coke and rum, I'm like, so what, I'm drunk. It's the freaking weekend, baby, I'm about to have me some fun. Bounce, 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 bounce. Now it's like murder, she rolled. Once I get you out them clothes, privacy's on the dough, but still they can hear you screaming more. Girl, I'm feeling what you're feeling, no more hoping and wishing. I'm about to take my key and stick it in the ignition. So give me that, let me give you that. Running her hands through my fro, bouncing on 24s. Why they say?
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by Chris Ying and Peter Meehan of Lucky Peach Magazine. And the theme of the issue is the sweet spot, appropriately listening to R. Kelly for that. Before the break, we were talking about a lot of things. Most recently, we were talking about print magazines. You know, there's so much stuff to talk about with, like, the future of print. You know, I've had people on the show before who say that maybe it's going to die, maybe it's changing into a new format. But what's cool about you guys is that I think you've found a perfect medium with both an actual print and, you know, video. That being said, what is uncompromisable in print magazines, like, that will always be sort of evergreen, that's working well in your magazine? Like, it can be imagery or obviously content, but what do you think people embrace the most about what you're doing?
You know, I think that people have responded really well to the magazine because we allow writers and artists to sort of have free reign as far as how much space they get. We don't, I mean, the photos we publish, we try to print large, you know, photographers and artists put a lot of work into doing things for us. And so we want to make sure that we, you know, don't cram their work into a tiny little corner somewhere. And then,
but then we tend to write all over their photos.
Yeah. It is our house style to write on top of your photos. And then, you know, all of our pieces are super long. You know, more than anything, I think we're trying to create pieces and features that have appeal beyond just, I'm hungry right now, this is a picture of some food, and here's how we made it. I think that...
I feel like we try to make something that we don't hate. And if we get that far, that's good. And then if people like that, that's even better. But I don't think we tried very hard to make it appealing, you know, in any particular way, or like think about a, you know, we just tried to make something that we thought wasn't, you know, boring or whatever. And people kind of got into it, which is just surprising to me.
Yeah. It was also fun and exciting to produce, despite that description of the magazine. You should still go out and check it out.
No, it's. I mean, without giving away too much of my own personal thoughts on it, I mean, it is amazing.
Give away your personal thoughts on it.
Yeah, I will. No, it's. I mean, the thing is, you're selling it in a lot of places now, like Whole Foods, right?
I think it's going to be in some Whole Foods stores this time around.
But I mean, it's one of those magazines.
You could buy it with quinoa.
Ooh, yeah.
But you could use quinoa as currency, or you could buy it alongside your quinoa.
I think you should try to buy it with quinoa.
With quinoa. Yeah,
you should be totally. Like, you should be like, the government's about to fall. Quinoa is going to be the new currency.
Well, no, I mean, like, I would want to, this is creepy, but I want to stick it in a Ziploc bag because it's like, it's so pretty. Every single page is, it stands on its own, you know, which I can't really say for a lot of.
That's nice of you to say.
Well, we have some really talented guys at the McSweeney's office. Brian
two,
and Walter.
Two of them.
There's two of the many talented people there are, you know, really excited working the project. And they don't come at it. None of us actually come at it really, except for maybe Peter, with like a food journalism or food media background whatsoever. And so we're, and Peter's aesthetic is not a food magazine aesthetic either. You know, Peter loves Gary Panter and, you know.
Yeah, I always like, yeah, like, I love like free, weird, zine-y printed publications, like even like terrible, like, you know, like Xeroxy stuff, you know, I think is really exciting. You know, that's when like people say print's dying. It's like, no, you know, it's, I mean, maybe, you know, like the media landscape is going to change a little bit from what it's been, you know, or maybe it won't. I don't know, you know, what's going to happen there, but I don't think people are ever going to stop making, you know, printed things to share their opinion. I mean, I was out at Brooklyn Kitchen, I mean, it was like 6 months ago or something, and got a zine called Slice Harvester, and, you know, there's like Diner Journal by those guys who have, you know, Diner over on the water, and I think there are a lot of people doing interesting things in print, and it's cool to be part of that conversation. You know, Canal House Cooking, I don't know if you know that, like, three times a year cookbook series that Melissa Hamilton and Christopher Hirschheimer is doing, but I think that's brilliant, and that's another, you know, I found that super inspiring. That was definitely something that made me think that this was possible, seeing what those two people are doing out of one place and how much quality they're generating. So I think I just rambled totally away from what the question was, so I'm going to go back to talking about quinoa as currency now. I think red quinoa is going to be worth more, I'm just saying, in case anybody wants to stock up.
It's true. That's what I eat all the time. It's crazy. What's up with Roadhouse? Anthony Bourdain has a full article in this issue, pretty much a pay into Roadhouse.
What is not up with Roadhouse? Roadhouse.
Chang is like, when we were in Kyoto at this 3-star Michelin restaurant, you know, we're in, you know, it's like a private dining room with a sunken table, and it's so expensive and so exquisite. And Dave and I spent the entire 2.5-hour meal talking about Roadhouse. And by I say we, I mean he talking at me about Roadhouse and his many... He's just like, it's all he ever actually talks about. I don't even think he knows how to cook anymore. I think he just knows how to turn on a DVD player and watch Roadhouse. So that was, you know, and it was just, Tony thought that was funny and used that. You know, he's, Tony is our film columnist, so he's going to have a film column in each issue. So Roadhouse was his choice for this one.
I've tried to watch it. I love Patrick Swayze, but I haven't fully watched the whole Roadhouse series, so
This interview is over. We gotta go. That's just terrible.
I haven't watched Roadhouse in its entirety in like probably a decade.
Oh, this magazine is over.
That's it. No, well, I tried to buy it like when you were in town one time and we were meeting with Dave and he was talking about Roadhouse because it's the only thing he can talk about anymore. I went out to Kim's Video down the block from Noodle Bar and got a copy of Roadhouse just because. You can't buy it on iTunes. Like, you can't. It's not available on any of the services. You actually have to have a DVD to get it. And I bought it both just to be funny, to walk outside and come back inside with a copy of Roadhouse, but also because I intended to bring it home and watch it. And, you know, and there's a DVD trailer commentary thing where they interview, like, 30 bouncers at, like, Roadhouses across America, and I really wanted to watch that, but then Dave took it. So I still haven't really seen Roadhouse in a long time.
I was raised a good studious Asian boy, and so when I knew that Roadhouse was going to be discussed in this issue, I went out and watched it.
Okay,
I rented it.
Let me ask you a question. When you knew that Ramen Girl was going to be written about in the first issue, did you watch Ramen Girl?
I watched Ramen Girl with Dave Chang.
Wow.
At 2 a.m, drinking Pappy Van Winkle.
Wow.
We did not make it through. That's the world's worst movie.
Yeah, I watched like 30 seconds of it on the internet and wow, yeah, heavy duty. So no, I have not seen Roadhouse.
Are there any hints to what's happening in the next issue as to theme?
We're open
anything?
To suggestion. No, we can say what the theme is.
Yeah, it's gonna be like chefs and cooks or cooks and chefs. We'll come up with some snappy title for it at some point. Did you like the little sound effect? It's Heritage Radio Network right there. That's the big
Peter
Meehan
used to be a Foley artist before he became a food journalist.
I don't even know what that is.
Cooks and chefs. We're going to try to explore, you know, this cult of the chef, as I keep calling it. This, you know, like why chefs matter. Also, you know, Dave has an abiding interest in the state of the cook or the state of cooking, I guess you would say.
And then try to do a bunch of non-chefy shit because I think that, you know, it's because Dave's part of the magazine and, you know, we're buddies with a bunch of fancy chefs. It's easy to slip into just talking about fancy chefs and what fancy chefs do. And while that's interesting, you know, legitimately interesting to us, you know, reflecting a broader picture of what cooking is, I think is also going to be one of the challenges of putting the issue together.
Yeah, we're going to try to make it a little more useful to...
I don't think usefulness is something that this magazine will ever achieve.
It can, like, prop up tables.
Yeah, like an uneven table. Like, yeah. Boom, it could be there. It could probably sop something up, but I've never tested its absorbency.
No. It's coated
like
paper.
Like quinoa. Yeah.
It's coated paper. Yeah. No good?
It's expensive. Don't soak things up with it.
Where can people buy the new issue, The Sweet Spot?
McNally Jackson has a whole bunch of
copies.
Yeah,
we were just there the other day. They have tons of copies. You should probably buy 3 from there so they don't end up with a bunch of leftovers.
It's sort of a crapshoot, I'll be honest with you. We printed a lot of copies.
Little bookstores like, you know, Word here over in Greenpoint, they'll have it. You know, like any kind of food bookstore, a lot of them are carrying it. Some Whole Foods will probably be carrying it this time around.
But, you know, as always, we'd encourage you to support the independent bookstores, you know, keep those guys going. They all have them. Every independent bookstore will have it.
Wow.
That's a guarantee.
I think now you're just lying. Now you're just lying to people. It's wrong.
That's really bad.
And then there's the McSweeney site. You know, you can order it from there if you're at home and
which
alone.
Which is?
McSweeney's.
Store.McSweeney's. McSweeney's.
3 E's in McSweeney's.
Dot net.
What happened to .com?
McSweeney's.com is not something we own.
Look at that.
We could buy it for a lot of money.
Who has it? Is it like a Scottish construction?
Al-Qaeda.
Oh. The terrorist one.
Well, you heard it here first. Peter Meehan, Chris Yang, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
To listeners out there, go get The Sweet Spot, The Lucky Peach, issue number 2. The blue vibrator cocktail is delicious for sure. Oh, wow. Tune in next week to another episode of You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to Carlos Salguero.
Thanks,
Jack
Carla.
Jack Inslee and the crew at Heritage and Roberta's. Check y'all later.
Get some meat, turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make if you hear me now singing loud.